It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
All right, what's up? What's happening from Northwest Field? I didn't mess it up, Logan Paulson.
Yeah, that's good, man. Well done.
This is the first time that I have seen a victory in this stadium since like two stadium names ago. I think three team names ago. Of course, I wasn't here for all of the games between like 2019 and then. But hey, Commanders 21, Giants 18. We have a victory, boys and girls. You called it on the radio.
Yeah.
But first of all, real quick, just give the people, how was it being in the booth for the first time?
It was great, man. You know, Bram's such a pro. He does such a great job kind of just holding your hand through the whole process. And obviously, miss not having Fletch here. But it was good for me to step in and get some experience and call the game and a win, which was fantastic. It's much easier to do when they win the football game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So very excited about that for you. Congrats.
Thanks,
on
man,
that. And now
it.
Now you get to go back to your regular duty of breaking it all down. So the Commanders obviously get the win today, 21-18 on a franchise record, 7 field goals.
Crazy.
For Austin Seibert. That's right. 7 field goals for Austin Seibert. That's the good news. They found a kicker who could hit field goals. Of course, the bad news is that that means 0 for 5 in the red zone. Well, I guess 0 for 6 by the end, technically. And then 1 they never got in the red zone. So there's positive and there's negative. They moved the ball. They got in the red zone all those times, Logan. How do you try to make sense of, obviously a win is good, but of the offense today?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think saying that the most important thing is that you win the game. However you get that done, let's make sure that happens. And so I think obviously getting the dub is fantastic, but, first things first, let's be positive. I think the way they were able to move the ball, the way Cliff was able to call the game, Jayden Daniels extending plays, stealing possessions, stealing first downs was fantastic. I thought he saw the field much better today. I thought he pushed the football down the field a little bit more consistently today. That's great. The way they ran the football was excellent. I thought the offensive line played well. All those things are true in between the 20s. Then for whatever reason, when they got inside the 15, everything kind of shifted gears. And again, some of that's penalty driven, some of that's negative play driven, and that's something they got to look at and evaluate once they get down the red zone. And I think, you know, maybe going back and looking at it, Cliff, like, we're trying to be too perfect in the red zone, we're trying to call, check, move guys too much, it gets a little bit too loud there, let's just run our favorite play and let it rip. And you know, that's something that I've experienced with Kyle and Sean. They've kind of had to go back to the drawing board and say, we're not quite there yet. Let's regress it a little bit and just make sure we're getting the plays called that we want to get called as opposed to getting super cute. But I think if you're a fan of offensive football and a fan of the direction this could go, I think you got to feel very, very strong about today's performance by the Washington Commanders offensively. Again, with the caveat that they kick 7 field goals and some of those need to be touchdowns.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's really hard to execute in the red zone as is.
Yeah.
Dude, penalties will just kill you down there. And literally every single drive almost had one. There's 5 red zone penalties and 6 red zone trips. So and by the way, there was another one that got declined, the Sam Cosmi hold. So it's all procedural. Like, that's got to get cleaned up. And I think in general, that was something that they'll probably talk about this week, is like the operation wasn't as smooth today as it was for much of training camp. For I think, you know, for all the other problems that popped up last week, certainly was not as smooth as last week. But I also think, like, there's just certain stuff that you're going to live with at this point in the calendar, because this is Jayden Daniels' second career start. And, you know, the Giants do present some interesting stuff. And, you know, if you're inside and you're making sure that Dexter Lawrence doesn't wreck things, which he didn't, overall a great job, I can understand being a little antsy. So at the end of the day, like, it can't happen. It shouldn't happen. But it's not, obviously it wasn't fatal. They ultimately were able to win the game.
Yeah, and I think that's the only thing. Like, it's both this game and the Tampa Bay game are both growing experiences and learning experiences. I will say it's much more easily digestible, as you know, covering the team for a long time, that it happens in a win. And as a former player, any correction you're making after a win just is much easier to kind of, it's much more palatable. So I think that's something to be positive about. Like, this team is not a final product. We're not saying this team's perfect. There's still a ton of growing that needs to happen. However, I do think that getting the W is important, right? Like, think about how long, like last year, you know, like, for example, how tough that season was, like, with all those losses. I don't think that's going to be this year, because I think we've got a much more competitive roster and a group of guys that are motivated to get better, and that's coaches included. So, again, lots of room for improvement offensively, but I think you can draw some really cool things too, like the play, the nuance of the play, the motions, the pre-staff shifts, all that stuff was there today. The creativity that everyone was like, oh my gosh, is it lacking last week? It was on display here today. So if you're a fan, I think Cliff had a nice little bleep you to everybody to
start the game.
I think so too.
Terry on the right side for a screen pass for the first play of the game.
Right, 100%.
Very on the nose.
100%. And again, he's probably not listening too much to the national media, but I think he's a very, like I've talked to him briefly a couple times, he's a very smart person. And so, like, obviously smart people know what good offense looks like in the NFL, and they know how to maximize their players. And I think it was good for him to show that today, and I think it was good to see those guys get maximized, which was awesome.
Yeah, for sure. I think the other big thing that I'm curious to look at on tape when we get back to it on Tuesday is the difference in the first and second half for how Jaden saw the field. I almost texted you in the middle of the game. I was like, let him focus on calling the game. But I almost texted you at halftime because it felt like by the end of the first half, Jaden was no longer looking to throw. And Cliff only called like three or four dropbacks in the first half. Like, it was very, very limited in terms of the pure dropbacks. Obviously, there were more passing attempts. You had a ton of screens in that first half. But I also didn't blame Cliff because it felt like every time Jaden truly dropped back to pass, he was kind of counting to five and then looking to run. He's like, I know I can get the first down running. And I thought he missed some guys. Yeah. And then in the second half, he was a little more patient in the pocket. He starts to get some big plays in his with his arm. I asked him about it after the game, and he said, no, there wasn't any discussion. Like, it was just, you know, hey, the defense dictates what we do.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't know if the tape's going to hold up on that one in terms of dictating what should have happened. But I think overall, while that sounds like a negative, and like obviously from a pure evaluation grade standpoint, like it's not going to grade out optimally, watching him flip that switch in the second half is so massive because I was sitting with our buddy Michael Phillips, and we just kind of were like, it's in there. We know he can do it. This isn't other quarterbacks that have been here and other rookies that are running quarterbacks that you're just like, that dude can't read the field. Like, he shows little flashes. And the second half, I just thought he did a significantly better job of that. I don't know how you felt calling it, but it definitely felt like second half much more polished as a passer than the first half.
I think definitely coming out of last week's game, I remember I had all those kind of like, I don't know how well he's seeing it. I didn't get that same exact vibe. I thought for the quick game stuff that Cliff called, I thought he did a really nice job getting the ball out quick, understanding where the underneath players were and where the soft spots would be. I thought he had a couple of nice, you know, stick routes, 5 yard sit routes to Terry. And again, that's not a way to run an offense. He also had a couple kind of up the seam to Zach, which I thought were great. And I just thought he was able to build off of that. And again, like, was it perfect? No, but I thought it was better than the week before, which was encouraging. And then I thought it continued to improve as the game went on. So again, I think that's one of the reasons I come out of the game so optimistic about the offense, is because that his maturation from last week to this week and his maturation from the first snap to the last snap of this game, I think shows a tremendous maturity. Like, I was talking to him in the locker room after the game with Bram, and one of the things that came up, he's like, oh, on that last play to Noah Brown, like, he's the backside concept. And I was able to work through the front side, get there, deliver the football. And, you know, understanding that the front side's dead because of the coverage and working through that so quickly is special. Like, I hate, like, it's hard for young players to say, I know this coverage, I know this is dead, let me check it and then work my way across the formation as quickly as he did. And again, I think you're seeing what he's capable of as a passer while being insulated with some of the stuff he does as a runner.
Yeah, and I think the next big piece for this offense is going to be, how do you unlock the vertical game? Because that is still something where, like,
100%.
The average depth of target's real shallow. That's going to be natural when you have a ton of screens. But it's one thing if he hits a bunch of those screens and then can pop one over the top. And they haven't hit. Obviously, Jaden missed at least one in terms of a read and missed another actual throw last week. But, you know, no real big vertical attempts this week. Is that just the Giants doing a good job and saying, hey, you're not going to beat us this way? Or, I mean, because they move the ball. So, like, at the end of the day, you have to punch it into the red zone. The offense was good, but you don't know one way to not have to score in the red zone.
Big plays.
Big plays.
Yeah, and I think when you look at, like, modern NFL offenses, explosive plays are big. And so they were able to get to some of those in the run game, obviously.
Yeah.
And also, I think understanding what the Giants were offensively probably influenced the lack of deep shots early. Because, like, why am I going to put the ball at risk? Why am I going to expose the football that way if I don't have to? If the Giants aren't forcing me to do that? And so I think it was a really masterfully called game by Cliff. A lot of screens, a lot of RPOs, a lot of pre-check reads in terms of, hey, we got two over two here, let's throw the bubble type of stuff like that. And I felt like that really let them settle in. And again, like, those are really hard plays for quarterbacks to run sometimes because they require immediate decisions. And I thought he looked very dexterous in those situations. So again, I'm not sure that this is this might, the lack of vertical passing game in this game to me feels like more of an indictment of the Giants. And again, we'll watch the film, we'll figure it out.
Sure.
But at least sitting here right now, you know, an hour after the game ended, that's kind of my thought, is that Cliff, they don't have to do that. And I think, honestly, Cliff did a great job of like stacking plays. You know, they ran a bunch of screens in the first half. They get that completion to Zach up the seam, which is on a fake screen. So I think seeing all that stuff kind of layer in and seeing the diversity of the offense, which we didn't get last week because, you know, they were kind of rushed and playing catch up and in different
right, they were
of
down
offense,
early, time score situation.
I thought was very, very encouraging. And I, again, the creativity on the Austin Ekeler, you know, I guess that's a screen, but like boot
throwback,
to the right,
yeah.
Throwback. I just, the setup of it was just exquisite. Chef's kiss. You know what I'm saying? It was, we're bringing the motion across. We're bringing the back this way. We lose the back. The backside hook player's chasing the boot, and there's nobody there. And that's with the pen. So again, Cliff's showing his brains and showing where this offense can get to once Jaden continues to improve. I mean, think about it. This is his second game,
yeah.
And I don't have a lot of negative criticism of how he performed in terms of the decisions that he made running, the decisions that he made throwing. And the one thing I'd say is you got to be careful taking that shot in that third and long scramble. I understand what you're doing there, you know, because we got to get the first down. But that's if I had to give one criticism, it's be careful.
Yeah. Hey, dude, we need you. I do want to, before we move on from the offense real quick, you mentioned the running game and the big explosives. I have loved watching the running game coming together. And I don't know who's the biggest influence on it. Obviously, Anthony Lynn, Brian Johnson, Bobby Johnson, and Cliff all brought a lot of really cool creative stuff to this offense. How have they been able to be so cohesive so far? And some of the big plays they get today look like their game plan runs. Like they look like they were on it today in that part of the game. What did you see?
It's really funny because you see a run, like for example, they run, it's either center guard pull or guard pull to the play side of the run. And that was a run that the Giants ran a ton last year, and we had a really hard time fitting. And they ran that probably four times today. And so that's, you know, the offensive line coach, what's his first name?
Bobby Johnson.
Bobby Johnson, yeah. Right? All these Johnsons, right?
Yeah.
So Bobby Johnson.
Bobby, Brian.
Love that. Brian Johnson, they run that keeper to Zach Ertz or the little zone read. That is something they ran to death in Philadelphia, right? And then you see kind of that draw out of empty where we're inserting the tight end, and that is Cliff Kingsbury all day. So I think you, again, even in today's game, you see how there's all these people providing ingredients for the run game, and it ends up being very effective. And I think ultimately you got to look at the way they constructed this O-line is they got a bunch of guys who are grinders. And so when you can have the game in a manageable situation, those guys are good run blockers.
Yeah.
And then Brian Robinson and Austin Ekeler. I mean, Austin Ekeler, man, looks like a version of himself from 2 years ago. Brian Robinson, I think, has got special written all over him at this point. And again, this is a still to be determined on this Giants defense in terms of how good they are. But, man, they ran the ball very effectively today.
All right. Defensively, it's funny. I just took a quick peek at the comments, and people are not happy about a defense that ultimately gave up 18 points today.
Yeah.
Now, that is a little bit misleading because you got a kicker situation, Graham Gano pulling his hamstring on the wacky bit, especially for a dude who is a really good sprinter.
He's a very good sprinter. And, again, like, it's just sometimes that first one, you're not quite warmed up all the way.
Yeah.
Get a little pull there, so that's tough deal. Feel bad for him.
Maybe misleading on the point total, but still, at the end of the day, they held him to 18 points. It is what it is. They defended some two-point conversions, and yet everyone's mad, which on some level is understandable because there's some frustrating things there. Let's start with the positive, though. Like, how did they overcome some of the mistakes and some of the weaknesses to ultimately produce what they needed to produce?
Yeah, so I think the first thing I'd have to give kudos to, I almost said Wink Martindale.
Joe Witt Jr.
Joe Witt Jr., thank you. Yeah, wow, that's been a long day. Joe Witt Jr., right? In terms of how he changed, I mean, we were talking about this before, like understanding that, hey, we're having a hard time in man-to-man coverage. And Brian Daboll, to his credit, was absolutely dialing it up on third down with his man beaters. And so that put us in a bad spot, put Mike Davis in a bad spot on the first third and 10. He has to run through a ton of traffic, puts Benjamin St. Juste in the third quarter on a bad one, you know, because he's got to run through that tight end kind of pick or rub route. It wasn't a screen. But, like, that's part of playing man coverage. You got to learn how to negotiate that stuff. All of a sudden, we get into kind of softer coverages. We're able to keep it in front of us. We're able to make some plays on the football. I really like that transition from him mentally, kind of saying, this is what I want to do. It's not working the way I was hoping. Let's shift gears. And then I think you say, man, like, Frankie Luvu was an absolute monster today. Like, his ability to deliver physical contacts on basically in the shortest amount of space you can imagine is just incredible. Like, he almost knocks Malik Nabers out of a game, like, running him down from behind. The way he fits on linemen, the way he blitzes backs, like, gosh, tremendous. Like, just how they're going to be able to build around that piece. Benjamin St. Juste had a great day today. There are a lot of positive things, and I think you see the defensive ingenuity kind of at the forefront there, saying this is what we thought we were going to be able to do. We can't do it. Let's win this football game and let's let the ego out of it and just make these put our guys in a better position to make plays.
No, I agree. It's very clear based off of what we saw in week one and what we saw for the first basically three quarters today. They want to be a man team on third down. They want to be able to blitz. They want to have that.
Because it gives you that flexibility.
Right, yeah. Exactly. It gives you so much freedom because it's like, hey, you guard him, you guard him, you guard him. The rest of y'all, we don't know what you're going to do with you on a down-to-down basis, which means they don't know either. But I confirmed this with DQ after the game. Like, what was, you know, it looked like you guys played a lot more two late in that game. And he's like, yep. And it was because of the receiver.
Yeah.
And they basically said, like, Malik Nabers is killing us. They are doing the thing that teams, like smart OCs, do with great receivers, which is we are going to target the hell out of this guy until you stop us. And I think Dan is realistic. You know, this is something he said in the post-game press conference. He was asked about how you feel about corners. And he's like, we're basically undecided, basically saying like, we don't know what we're going to do at corner. Clearly the substitute for Mike Davis to Noah Igbinoghene, I think worked better. Yeah. Noah had his own problems, including the PI on a third down.
But a little more physical, a little tighter in coverage. Again, 100%. It's not perfect, but
it was better.
But that's kind of what you're dealing with. You're getting with guys who, you know, Noah was kind of up and down on the Dallas practice squad last year. Mike Davis is no longer with his former team. That's happening for a reason. I do think Mike Davis did some good things today, but obviously struggled in critical moments. And I think as much as, you know, I don't want to be critical of him, like he'd tell you firsthand, right? I got to be better in that 2-minute drive and on that 3rd and 10. So where do we find the guys? Where do we find the horses? How do we insulate them? Great job by the coaching staff basically being like, this isn't cooking for us.
Right.
Let's find something different.
And so what they did too is specifically like, I think Daniel Jones, he had clean looks of like, this is either man-to-man or a cover three where, like, it's basically man-to-man.
Yeah.
Like, I've got Malik Nabers isolated. And they were like, we are no longer isolating Malik Nabers.
Yeah.
And there was even one play late in the fourth quarter where they showed too high before the snap and then Shin came flying down in the box.
Yeah.
But because it wasn't a clean look pre-snap, like Jones couldn't just lock in on Malik Nabers and wait for him to get open. And so I think that willingness to adapt mid-game speaks really highly of Joe Witt Jr. I think clearly they have a lot of work to do to figure out what they want to do from a structure standpoint and coverage. And the other thing they got to figure out is like there is not a lot of pass rush happening right now. And, you know, for whether it's the guys in the middle who are getting paid a lot of money or whether it's these edge guys, like what's the – like is that as much of a problem as it feels like it is? And then what do they do about it?
Well, I think the corner thing makes it a problem potentially because I think one of the things you were looking at in week one, which again, like I thought, again, credits to Joe Wood Jr. and the defensive line coaches and the blitz packages that they were able to develop. Because you look at it and you say they were able to consistently find one-on-ones, change the rush angles, which is so hard for offensive linemen to deal with, and they're able to, like, to the tune of 5 or 6 pressures, which is awesome. Here, we're getting out of our man coverage stuff. We're getting out of our blitz packages. Now what do we do? And now it's like these guys got to win one-on-ones versus a team that, quite frankly, was doing a lot of heavy play action stuff that's going to mitigate the rush tremendously because you're going to get literally 4 double teams across the board in a lot of those situations, or you're going to single your best offensive lineman, you know, again, Andrew Thomas, who is, I'd say, probably top 3 or 4 at the position. And I like that matchup against most defensive linemen in the NFL outside of like Micah Parsons or Myles Garrett. So great play call by Brian Daboll. Again, the coverage shell behind it is going to be something to really keep an eye on because they can get to some of that stuff with zone pressures. It just takes more coaching and more time on task as opposed to some of these man pressures. So to your original question, to me it's not an issue, but it becomes an issue if we can't play the coverage structures we want to play.
Yeah, no. And obviously, even if it's not quote-unquote an issue, having a pass rush is better than
it's
not having one.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
let's make it an issue for them, so to speak. The good news on the more coaching front is now you got an extra day. Monday Night Football. Up next. That's the good news for this staff. The bad news is as they've struggled with number one receivers 2 weeks in a row, Jamar Chase is up next. And we'll see if T. Higgins is back in the lineup with that hamstring issue that he's been having. Missed the first 2 games of the season. So tough one next. Joe Burrow and company on Monday Night Football. Should be a lot of fun. We got some time to dive in and break it down. Anything else we want to say on the instant reaction show here?
I just want to say Benjamin St. Juste. I mean, I know he's been getting a lot of heat, a lot of hate, but this is one of the better games I've seen him play in his career. So if this staff is maximizing him and giving the structure that he needs, like I'm very confident they'll be able to figure something out at the other corner, even if it doesn't allow them to do exactly what they do. So I think that's something to keep an eye on for fans. Like, how do they continue to maximize some of these guys in the back end?
Yeah, for sure. And I'll say this real quick, just on an even bigger picture. Like, they made calculated decisions this offseason. We've talked about this, right? Yeah. But they made calculated decisions this offseason that certain guys they were just going to have to live with, because, like, by nature, a free agent is someone who the incumbent team didn't want to bring back in almost every scenario. There are rare situations where injuries or salary cap, whatever, but typically the best players in football, they get contract extensions. So it's really hard to do that in free agency. That's why building through the draft takes time, because you can only get so many high draft picks, and then those guys are rookies and it takes time. And with BSJ and with Forbes and the corner position
the
in
Forbes
general.
Thing will be interesting to see if he can figure it out. Because again, I think you come in here and you say, if we can get BSJ to this spot and Forbes to this spot, we'll be okay and be able to do what we want.
Right.
And so that's something, again, coming off the broken hand. Does he figure it out? Because they kind of has to go for them to do what they want to do.
Right. And so they took a risk there. And, through 2 weeks, it hasn't exactly come up aces, but this week was better than last week. And we'll see what they can do with it moving forward as the coaches learn them. And as obviously they learn their coaches and what they're being asked to do as well. We'll be back on Tuesday to break down the film. So make sure to subscribe to Take Command wherever it is that you get your podcast. If you are watching or listening right now, Take Command will be there. On my page, you'll get some of the highlights on 106.7 The Fan and Team 980 on YouTube. You get the full episodes and, of course, full episodes on the audio side in the Take Command feed. Yes, Logan.
Elite comment. You know, you look like Dan Orlovsky's younger brother. Comment. I don't know who just said that. It just went up the screen because we're getting so many comments, but love it. Whoever you are, comment.
This one, Silly Goose. Really Craig looks like what the younger brother of Dan Orlovsky would look like.
Elite.
I'll tell Dan that the next time I talk to him. That's what happens if I actually put product in my hair, everybody. And with that, we'll see you next time.